Smith versus City of Wellsville, 20-3240. And I'm going to pronounce it Mr. Ferry. Is that correct?
Ferry.
Yes. You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Larry Ferry for the plaintiff, Regina Smith. I intend to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. We believe we have an equal protection claim because 20 years ago, the City of Wellsville elected to extend its water service outside its city limits to property that Regina Smith ultimately ended up acquiring an ownership interest in. She wasn't married to Mark Smith at the time, but she and he married about 10 years ago. The city at the time did not require a water main to be put in, but they let three neighbors attached to the service line that extended from Mark Smith's meter down Woodson Road past all these properties. The parties all this time have not had equal treatment to other customers in the Wellsville water distribution system.
Were the other properties there in 1999? That's just a question.
Yes.
One.
Okay. Yes.
And you, for an equal protection claim, we look at comparators, and they have to be similarly situated in all material respects. And I think that's where I struggle a little bit with your equal protection claim, because I don't really think you've come forward with anyone who's in the same position as the Smiths, but was treated more favorably. Can you help me with that?
Certainly. Yes. We contend that all the other customers of the Wellsville water distribution system have a water main to which a meter is attached for their individual connection. Then they have a service line that goes from that meter to their house. They get a monthly bill from the water distribution system for the water that they use. Regina Smith doesn't have that. She doesn't have a water main that serves her and her three neighbors, to which separate meters are attached to. They don't all four get a separate water bill every month like everybody else in the system.
Let me ask this. Are there any other customers who have a private water line that other people connect to and are getting their water not from the city line, but connected to the private water line, which I believe is the circumstance here, if I understand it correctly?
Yes, you do understand it. And my answer is no.
Are there any? Pardon?
My answer is no, not that we know of.
Well, then aren't those the only, then if there aren't people like that, it's hard for me to see who your comparators are.
Our comparators are the other customers that have a water main that the city is responsible for and maintains, to which their meters, their individual meters, are connected to, and then the water line extends to their individual houses. So
as I understand what you're complaining about, it's what they did in response to the request to fix the shared water line issue, not way back when somebody made a decision to create the shared water line. And so, like Judge Hartz, I have a little bit of trouble, because if we're going to find that it violated equal protection for the city to have made these decisions, we need a comparator that's in the same situation. So we would have to have somebody who's on a shared water line who was treated more favorably.
There aren't any other shared water lines that have been created. Well, that's the problem.
Does that get to the district court's point that maybe what you have is not a federal lawsuit? It's not an equal protection clause lawsuit, but instead you might have a state claim against the fellow neighbors or something. In other words, just because you have something you're unhappy with does not translate to an equal protection clause.
We think this fits squarely under Willowbrook versus Olick. We are comparing apples to apples. We don't have a water main.
Well, are you, when you say comparing apples to apples, you're comparing your apple to every other apple in the city or outside the city, whether it's a residence at 105 Main Street downtown, aren't you?
Yes. What's wrong with that? I mean, that's discrimination. That's what we don't have that everybody else does have. We're paying the same water rates that everybody else is. Look, when you create a water system, it's not something that is being done in a third world setting. The Safe Drinking Water Act that was passed in 1974 in this country required public water system to be built a certain way to maintain the integrity of this water for the public good. And the system is regulated. It's engineering standards that are required. There's a whole scheme of regulatory conduct and engineering standards that goes into creating a public water distribution system.
Well,
and that's what we have here.
Excuse me, and then I'll let you first. I think we may have the same question. My concern is what Judge McHugh said at the outset, that to have a class of one equal protection claim, you need to have a comparator that's alike in all material respects. And I would think that one of the material respects here is you've got a shared water line. And there aren't any other people who have shared water lines. So you can't say you were treated worse than somebody else with a shared water line. And you're saying that it's not material, that this is a shared water line?
I'm saying that she can't sell her house because she doesn't have a water main and a separate meter, separate and apart from the meters of her neighbors.
Okay, so now you're switching to a different cause of action, because the fact, if she can't sell her house, we're not anymore talking about equal protection. We're talking about a taking, right?
Correct.
Well, I mean, it's helpful to me if we argue within the constitutional theory. So switching to that, to your takings claim, it's not at all clear that to me what type of taking you're arguing. I think what you're arguing is a Penn Central type taking, correct?
Yes. There's been a considerable economic consequence of her not having a water main like every other water customer in Wellsville and probably throughout the rest of this country.
Well, and Penn Central provides us with some factors that we use to assess how severe the taking is and whether it rises to a constitutional level. And one of the problems that I have is that your brief doesn't even attempt to apply those factors here, which is, in my view, a problem for prevailing on that claim.
Well, we think it's egregious. We think it's deliberate indifference. The city has been aware for at least 3 years that she has been wanting to sell her house and that they don't care. The mayor said that at the January 30 meeting. I don't care about the Smith's problem of selling their house. It is a substantial consequence for her to not be able to market her house and realize its fair market value.
So what is the market value of her home?
It's
you say the economic loss is $75,000, but that's out there by itself because we don't have what the value of the house is. And one of the things that we're supposed to look at in Penn Central is the impact on value. And we can't assess impact on value without knowing the value, which isn't in the record at all.
Our complaint says at least $75,000.
But that is what you're claiming is the reduction in value. And what Penn Central has us do is compare that to the total value, and we don't have total value.
Well, her total value is in the mid-200s.
You tell me that at oral argument, it's not in the record.
Mr. Furry, go ahead and answer that, and then I have a question.
Well, may I step back a minute to Olick? The Olick case compared Mrs. Olick's argument that she was being asked to give up a 33-foot easement on her property compared to a 15-foot easement on everybody else's property. That's essentially our argument here. We are comparing our lack of a water main to everybody else having a water main. And that's not fair. And the city can't discriminate when it elects to extend its water lines outside of its city limits by not providing equal equipment and equally secure water systems that everybody else has. We don't have somebody else that has basically an illegal tapping arrangement that we know about. If we knew of one, then what was the city to do? They're going to say the same thing. We're not going to do anything about it. So that means it's okay.
Let me ask a question on the takings claim. I understood that part of your complaint, tell me if I'm wrong about this, was that you were not allowed, the city wasn't allowing you to prohibit the neighbors from using the water going through your private line. Was that one of your arguments, one of your complaints?
That is one of our arguments. That's what the mayor said at the January 30 meeting.
That you were not allowed to simply stop them from taking water.
That's right. After the city attorney told us that you can kick them off because it's your private line.
Then the mayor said you can't.
Correct.
Okay.
And then this is the sequence of communications here is that the trained and certified water operator, Darian Kerr, told the Smiths you can't attach separate meters for the three neighbors because that line is not up to code. It is not a water main. It doesn't meet engineering standards, which means it has to be pressurized. It has to be sanitized. All the couplings and the fittings have to be up to standard engineering practices and codes. You can't attach water meters. The city attorney says, go and kick the neighbors off. We prepare this declaration, which is basically a workaround for everybody's problems to get the neighbors to come together and self-govern themselves over ownership of a water line. The city says they can attach separate meters.
So the water line was already laid in 1999, and the neighbors were already tapping in when the Smiths bought the property?
The water line went from the meter to Smith's property,
yes.
And then the neighbors tapped in.
But at the time that the Smiths bought in 1999, that was all existing. In other words, the neighbors didn't move in later and tap into the line.
Correct. So we think it's an Olick case. I know you have to be careful and you can't give everybody equal protection claims when their zoning applications are denied, but that's what we have here. And the city knows it and the water operator knows it, but the city's not listening to the water operator. The mayor's not listening to the water operator. And it's his job to see that the water system is compliant with all national standards, state standards, Kansas Department of Health and Environment and all the industry regulations that apply here. We don't have that. Everybody else in the system does. And it's affected our ability to market the property and honestly disclose what the situation is on our water line. This is a $67,000 problem. If she sells her house without disclosing it, to me, she's got that liability on her back for non-disclosure in spite of what city's attorney told Judge Brooms.
Your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Holder?
May it please the court, Andrew Holder on behalf of Appalese City of Wellsville, William Lytle, and Darian Kerr. Arguments thus far have spent some time focusing, at least initially, on the equal protection claim. So I'll start there. As the court, I think, has picked up, this is really can't be captioned as a class of one claim. This is really a situation of one claim. To ultimately prevail on an equal protection claim, the Smiths were required to establish that individuals that were similarly situated in every material respect were treated differently. And if they can't show that there's no material difference between themselves and the comparators, there is no class of one claim. To put what we're talking about in context here, we've got the city provides its water service from a main that's junctured into a water meter, and then it goes through a private line here. The Smiths don't complain that they don't have water service through their private line. They don't complain that as it pertains to them, their water is any different than anyone else's. What they complain about is that beyond their water meter, they've got neighbors that were tapped into their problem or into their private water line. The problem with that is there's no allegation that the city was involved in any way in the neighbors tapping into the line. There's no allegation that the city was assisted with that. In fact, there's correspondence that's in the record from the Smith Legal Counsel that specifically references the fact that this arrangement was probably created without the city's knowledge or consent. So when we talk about an equal protection claim, we never get off the ground because the true comparators here would be other individuals within the water district that have private lines and that have people tapped into the lines. Because ultimately what the Smiths are complaining about is when they brought this private the city's attention, the city didn't do anything about it. So really when we're looking for comparators, the question is, when other people brought similar arrangements to the city's attention, did the city do something different? And the answer to that is there's no allegations to identify anybody similarly situated. So we can't get there. With respect to the constitutional claims against Mayor Lytle and Mr. Kerr, in addition to the failure to establish an underlying constitutional claim, the other problem with the equal protection claim is that the only case that's cited here is the Olek case. And that's the first Supreme Court case to recognize a class of one theory. But factually speaking, apart from the fact that Olek in this case both have to do with a dispute about water, the Olek case is too broad to establish, as a general principle of law, it would not put these individuals on notice that the conduct here is an equal protection clause violation. The facts of the cases are too dissimilar. So it would be the appellee's position that Olek does not put anybody on notice, and the district court was correct to find that the individual defendants were entitled to qualified immunity.
Let me focus you on the takings claim for
sure.
If we draw reasonable inferences from the allegations in favor of the Smiths, as we have to. I mean, isn't it reasonable to expect that a disclosure of this sort to a prospective buyer would diminish the value of this property?
I think that generally speaking, there's obviously different buyers for different circumstances, but if we're talking about the majority buyers for a property like this, I think that's a reasonable inference, sure, Your Honor. With respect to the takings claim, and I think Your Honor hit the nail on the head during the initial parts, I think that the initial problem with the takings claim we're talking about is that although the Smiths have specified we're making a regulatory takings claim, that's about as much about the regulatory takings claim as we can derive from their opening brief. There's a brief reference in passing to the Penn Central factors, but there's no analysis for how the Penn Central factors apply here. And so I think that that's an argument that had to be raised, if at all, in the opening brief, and it simply wasn't here.
If we were to look at those factors independently, I mean, it looks to me like they've got some factors that support their claim.
Well, if you look at the Penn Central factors, I think that the key there is to look at the overall impact, and you've got to focus on the property as a whole. What we're talking about here is a water line is the issue, and the Smiths still have that water line. They still are able to get water at their house. As the district court referenced, even talking about what happened at the meeting, the offer at the meeting that was made was to provide individual meters to the individual neighbors, which would resolve the question about shared billing. So in that sense, I think that the magnitude of what we're talking about here doesn't support a finding of a taking.
Well, let me ask about the district court's reasoning here, which may have been quite appropriate at the time, but there's been some legal development since then. I understood the district court to say that since the Smiths can still access water, they still get all the water they want, there's been no taking. But one of their complaints was, it's our water line, and you've told us we can't prevent the neighbors from taking any of that water going through our line. That is a takings claim. That's a valid takings claim, is it not?
Well, I think that that would have been a good argument for them to have raised in their initial brief, but they didn't raise that there. And what we're looking at is a shifting takings claim, Your Honor. What you're talking about is a regulatory taking, and then we go fall back.
No, I'm not talking about a regulatory taking. See, I've been rather surprised that we haven't seen any 28J letters about the Cedar Point decision by the Supreme Court in late June. And that really changed the framework here, because this should not be looked at as a regulatory taking, at least by according to the Supreme Court majority. The minority probably would have looked at this as a regulatory taking, but the majority said the right to exclude others from your property is a fundamental property right. And if the government takes away from you your right to exclude others, that's a physical taking. It's not a regulatory taking. You don't have to argue the Penn Central issues. And that's exactly what is alleged in the complaint. And it wouldn't have been, there was the Cedar Point opinion came out, I want to double check this, after all the briefing in this case had completed. So when there was an allegation, a complaint that there's a physical taking, that was rejected by the district court on pretty solid ground at the time, but that's not the law anymore. And don't you think we need to send it back down to the district court now to consider whether in light of Cedar Point, there is a physical taking here? Because no, for the mayor to say you can't exclude the others from your water line is clearly a physical taking, it seems to me, under Supreme Court law 3 months ago.
Well, Your Honor, touching on that point, as it pertains to the individual defendants and the qualified immunity argument, certainly the Cedar Point decision, which I will admit I'm candidly not familiar with, if that was decided this summer, that wouldn't have been capable of putting them on clear notice. So as it pertains to qualified immunity claims, I don't think that Cedar Point would require a remand. And as it pertains to the claim against the city, I would fall back on the argument that what we have here, according to allegations, is an announcement by the mayor, which is not a binding decision by the city. What the allegations of the amended complaint say is that the mayor announced it. So making a threat of a physical taking is different than a physical taking. So I think that's the distinction between Cedar Point and what you're talking about.
Well, there might be an issue there. I gather that, you know, if the mayor says you can't do it, and therefore you don't do it, can't you complain? Can't you complain that the mayor took your property improperly? I mean, they thought it's apparent that the Smiths thought this was an official determination. I'm not sure I'd feel comfortable if I were the Smiths at that point saying, that's what the mayor says. We're gonna ignore him. I don't know exactly how that should be resolved. It's not, but I would think an official determination like that might be considered a taking. At least that's something to be reconsidered on remand, it seems to me. You're totally right about qualified immunity. A decision in June of 2021. I just got a note that my internet connection is unstable. Can anyone hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you, Your Honor.
Okay.
I suppose my response to that would be there's no allegation anywhere within the First Amendment complaint of the city council making a vote on that. So there is certainly reference to the city of Wellsville having a city council form of government. So I that's my distinction would be that for it to be a taking, I think it's got to be an official act by the city that constitutes the taking. I don't think that alleging that the mayor announced his opinion on the matter is sufficient.
You may be right. It just seems to me that's better for the district court to consider on remand. Let me ask you a totally distinct question. And that was the district court's dismissal without prejudice of the state law claims.
Sure.
Given Kansas law, wasn't that an abuse of discretion?
I don't think it was an abuse of discretion, Your Honor. For it to be an abuse of discretion, first and foremost, he has to have made a choice that wasn't permissible under the law. And when we're talking about here, certainly the district court dismissed all the federal claims that it had original jurisdiction over. So under the statute, he had the option to either exercise supplemental jurisdiction or not. It's a permissible decision, certainly, for him to decline to exercise supplemental jurisdiction.
But one of the grounds for abuse of discretion is an error of law. And the district court clearly thought these claims could be brought in Kansas state court. Isn't that an error of law that would create an abuse of discretion?
I'm not sure that the district court clearly thought that. I believe, at least in the order on reconsideration, what the court said is that it was explicitly not making any finding about the ability of the plaintiff to pursue a claim under Kansas state law. And when you talk about the compelling reasons to exercise supplemental jurisdiction or not exercise supplemental jurisdiction, there's a clear roadmap here to avoid the potential outcome. And that is to file the claim, all of the claims in state court. And if the defendant elects I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm going to challenge you on that point. Federal law allows him to file in federal court and have all these claims adjudicated in federal court. Kansas has a unique, I couldn't believe it when I read what Kansas law was. You know, this was argued, that issue was argued last week before the Kansas Supreme Court. So we don't know how long it's going to be the law in Kansas. But at this point, to say, if you bring in federal court, which is your total right, and you lose on your federal claims, then you've lost on your state law claims too. That seems so contrary to federal policy that to dismiss those claims, even if you say it's without prejudice, that seems like an abuse of discretion. I would think from now on, or maybe for the last 20 years, federal district courts in Kansas should not dismiss Kansas state law claims just because the federal laws are dismissed. We can't do anything about what the Kansas Supreme Court decides, but as long as they're deciding what they are, that sure seems to undermine federal statutory policy.
Well, and to the extent that there are concerns about that, the point I was making is that there's a roadmap to avoid that, and that's to file state court.
The roadmap you say is to not go to federal court. That's not acceptable. That's not acceptable. You have a right to go to federal court.
you certainly do have a right to go to federal court, but that right, it's not a secret that that right comes with a potential risk. Under Kansas state law, and that's decisions that were decided in the 1980s and then again in 2010.
And those risks are contrary to federal policy. And Kansas can decide that they're not going to acknowledge that federal policy, but as long as they take that position, we'll see what happens after the on the case pending now. But as long as they take that position, well, go ahead, Judge McHugh.
Well, I just want to push a little bit on whether the district court understood that, whether there was an error of law, because the district court says there are no compelling circumstances that justify this court retaining jurisdiction. And then in the order denying the motion for reconsideration, the court says this ruling does not foreclose a judicial resolution of this dispute. I mean, how can there be a judicial resolution of the dispute if Kansas treats the failure to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over a claim as a decision on the merits barred by res judicata? I mean, I guess I'm having the same problem with this that my colleague Judge Hartz is having, that it just seems quite contrary to our jurisprudence about supplemental jurisdiction. It's not, I mean, the thought that if I don't exercise jurisdiction of your over your claims, they're barred forever, is not something that's typically in the mind of a district court judge. And I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas fixes this.
And I can't comment on that part, but as the court noted, that is under consideration there. What I can say is that, the decisions on Kansas law are long established on this point. This is not as if this is a recent development in the law that, and so, when we talk about compelling reasons to exercise supplemental jurisdiction, I can't comment on what the court found compelling or not compelling. What I can say is that, under longstanding Kansas precedent, filing Kansas state law claims in a federal lawsuit, if those claims are, if the court elects not to exercise supplemental jurisdiction, that's a known consequence of that. So whether the court thought that was compelling or not, I can't speak to that. All I can say is that it was a known consequence at the time.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. You went over a little. I'm going to give Mr. Furry 30 seconds. If you don't need to use it, but if you think there's something that's come up in our discussion with Mr. Holder that you'd like to respond to, you have 30
seconds. I would very quickly. Yes, our most recent experience with federal courts in Kansas retaining jurisdiction of state law claims was in the Hart versus Johnson County case, H-A-R-T-E, with both Judge Phillips and Judge Hartz were involved in those appeals. And Judge Langstrom in that case retained jurisdiction of the state claims, and we actually ended up trying those to a jury after the first appeal, and then the second appeal came up. I would also argue that Hague 2 on page 630 says that if a city elects to extend water service to non-residents, those outside its jurisdiction, that they cannot discriminate.
Thank you.
I would argue that that
Thank
would...
You've gone over already, but that was...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Thank you very much. Case is submitted. Counselor excused.